Okay, we left off last week. So we had spoke a little bit about how a woman becomes a nida, and a little bit how a woman becomes reaching the point where she's able to become no longer a nida, and of course we reach the point where she has to go to the mikvah. So assuming that everything happened properly, as we spoke about last week, the Afsiktaras with the mokes, with the shimnakim, the works, everything, tachas, the woman's ready to go to the mikvah, the question is where do we go at that point? So the Gemara speaks about the significance of going to the mikvah at the right time. The Gemara speaks about tefillah bezman mitzvah. We technically pass in the halacha, what that means is as follows. There's a lot of lomdus in the Rishon, but tachas, the bottom line is, what that basically means is, as such, that for the purposes of Puravu, or even if a couple is technically fulfilled Puravu, having potentially more children, so the halacha definitely strongly recommends that the woman should go to the mikvah at the earliest possible time, i.e. on the Leil Tefillah, whenever she finishes the Catholic of the Shivanikiyah. If, however, for whatever reason, Puravu is not a factor, either because the couple is has a halachic reason not to be trying to fulfill the mitzvah, or to further the mitzvah of having children, or the husband's out of town, or the wife's out of town, some of the tachlis, the bottom line is that they're not going to be together that night, so then we paskin l'alocha that there is no technical obligation to go to the mikvah at that point. So we paskin tefillah bezman mitzvah for the purposes of having more children. If having children is not a factor, it's just a question of the couple will be together, then we would also encourage them to go to the mikvah at the earliest time. If for whatever reason it's not possible, if he forgoes and she forgoes, they're basically both mochel on it, and it's not for the purpose of having children, then technically speaking, she would be permitted to delay going to the mikvah. With that said, one should really reassess that some people have this attitude that, so we'll miss a night, and if it's Friday night, why should I bother going Friday night? Such a hassle, having company. So that's not a correct attitude. The correct attitude is when the Leil Tefillah comes, either for children's purposes or for relationship purposes, the bottom line is that the woman should always be encouraged to go to the mikvah. If it's not, it's not possible, but the starting point is that the woman should be encouraged to go to the mikvah. When we speak about going to the mikvah, so we're talking about primarily going to the mikvah on the night following the 7 days of Shiva Nikiyam. The Gemara tells us explicitly in the Enema Sechas Nida, for a lot of a complicated halachic reason, a woman has to go to the mikvah at night, although Minat Torah, she would be permitted to actually go Miba Od Yom, to go during the day, but Midrabanan, she is required to go always at night. There is a big question, again, it's beyond the scope right now, the Gemara, the Rishonim, the later post, the Shulchan Aruch, are there any dispensations, any situations that arise where maybe we can justify going to the mikvah Miba Od Yom to actually practically let the woman go to the mikvah during the day of the seventh day? There are different opinions in the Gedolei HaPoskim about this. There are some who basically rule that it's impossible. The seventh day is out of the question, nothing ever to discuss. And there are other posts who are a little bit more lenient under certain very, very extenuating circumstances. Those who follow that opinion, who follow those poskim who permit under certain extenuating circumstances to go to the mikvah in the seventh day, so one has to be aware of a few things. First of all, I mean extenuating circumstances. I don't mean that, mikvah is a far walk because it's off 2 blocks from your house on Friday night. That's not extenuating circumstances. Extenuating circumstances doesn't mean that I'm having a couple over for dinner that night either. It means I'm talking about some very, very serious reasons. The mikvah is out of the tchum. The mikvah is too dangerous. There's a blizzard that night. There's a hurricane. I don't know, whatever. Nafkaminas ladina. It has to be something which is really, really justified. Again, this is even within the Mekilim, within the Machmirim, there is no justification, but even within the Mekilim, it has to be very, very significant need has to arise. And number two, the couple should not be seeing one another until after dark. So one should try to arrange it in such a way that if the wife is going to the mikvah, let's say usually on a Friday afternoon, that's when these things come up, that the husband is out to an early mincha. You can come and sit and say shir shim if he wants, and sure, whatever it is, they should try to coordinate it. Now, Baruch Hashem, we have cell phones. We say Baruch Hashem for everything. Hashem Baruch Hashem Matov, Kach Baruch Hashem Ra. But whatever it is that we have cell phones, you can coordinate it. The wife's coming in, the husband's going out. You can figure out how an Eitzah to do it. But again, this is even within the Mekilim, even within those opinions that there's ever a justification. So one has to really contact a Rav about this to get. It's really a case by case situation. The eighth day is significantly more lenient. The eighth day is not a heter, it's not a freebie either, it's not a green light on the eighth day. But the eighth day already, the Gemara speaks about certain types of onsim. The Gemara, famous Gemara Masechet Nida, needed about the lions in town, and the lions apparently only hanging around the nighttime. So Chazal permitted for lions, they let the women go to the mikvah the eighth day during the day. So we have to try to extrapolate to that a little bit more modern day scenarios. Sometimes a very dangerous neighborhood may be a factor. The eighth day is significantly more lenient. But again, even eighth day shilas have to be brought to a rub because it's really a case by case. And you have to make make sure that the rav is in sync with the mikveh. Sometimes you'll call a rav, the rav will say it's okay, and you're going to another mikveh. That rav has no authority in that mikveh, and that mikveh is going to say, our policy is that the mikveh is closed during the daytime. I don't care what your rabbi says. So you have to make sure you get a psach that it's okay, and then you have to make sure that that the mikveh practically will implement that psach.
Is that dafka like during sunlight? So meaning the
7th day
is right, start the night.
The night? No. It has to be during the daytime. Yeah. The night before would be also in a Torah. Right. I should say that. Right. Mikveh yom kikula only applies in the daytime. There's one lone possibility. The Ramban suggests maybe the night. That's already not even quoted lahalach at all. Okay. Good. Very good. Okay. So, if in order for a woman to be able to go to the mikveh, so not only do all these the shivanikiyams and the bedikas and everything we spoke about last week have to take place, but there are certain basic achanas that have to take place. Again, most of these achanas are going to be in the domain of the woman, but after bichein, the husband should be aware of what's going on and supportive and helpful in whatever way, shape, or form. Before the woman goes to the mikveh, so she has to undergo the process, what's called the chafifa. So chafifa means that she has to wash herself. We assume both b'toras halacha and b'toras minhag, there are certain things that have to be done properly in order to maintain the standards of a chafifa. They basically translate for us to mean a very good shower. We have a minhag, and most of our communities, the minhag is to take a bath as well. The halacha requires that she does her hair especially well. She has to comb through her hair, brush through her hair very, very well. That's the ikah chafifa, according to many Rishonim. It includes all other kinds of preparations. It includes preparations of cutting nails and other kinds of removal of certain kinds of hair. So whatever the case may be, whatever is technically considered to be part of this process of chafifa. The chafifa is supposed to be take place before she goes to the mikveh, obviously, with two different opinions in the Rishonim as to exactly when is the optimal time for chafifa. The Chazal instituted chafifa. This is an old takana chafifa. Chafifa was instituted in the days of Ezra. Min HaTorah, the Gemara says, you don't need a formal chafifa. Min HaTorah, you just take a look and see. You look pretty clean. Fine. But mid the Rabbanan, you have to do a real formal scrubbing and cleaning and combing in order to be able to go to the mikvah. So when did Chazal want this chafifa to take place? So there are reasons to prefer chafifa during the daytime. There are reasons to prefer chafifa at nighttime. So one reason to prefer chafifa during the daytime is that the woman will be a little bit more relaxed. She was not going to be in such a rush. If you do a chafifa at night, then she's already nervous, it's already dark, it's cold, she wants to rush the job up, so maybe we should opt for chafifa during the daytime. On the other hand, the chafifa at night is better because it's closer to the mikvah. It's less of a chance for to develop problems after the chafifa. So because there are two different views in the Gemara, and the Rishonim as to when the optimal time for chafifa is, there is a general minhag that should try to be observed, if at all possible, to have a little bit of both. It means we try to encourage the women to start the chafifa late in the afternoon, before they go to the mikvah, and the chafifa should lead into the nighttime. A little bit of chafifa should be done at night as well. If for whatever reason that proper minute cannot be maintained, then mikra, then either one would be acceptable. Very often a woman's at work, she goes to work 7 o'clock in the morning, comes home 8 o'clock at night, you're going to tell her to do chafifa in the daytime. She's in the office, she can't take a shower in the middle of the office. So there's no choice, so she has to do the chafifa at night. So again, mikra, then any chafifa either during the day or at night would be technically acceptable. If all else is the same, then we try to encourage them to have this somewhat of a chafifa going from the day into the nighttime as well. She could start, if she could start a little bit 7 o'clock, she's probably not going to do a complete chafifa, she's then going to go spend the whole day at work, she's going to have to redo again. Usually what happens is, there are different women have different preferences as to when and where exactly to do this chafifa. Some women like to do everything in the mikveh. They like to go to the mikveh, they don't want to be bothered in the house, the kids are running around, they'll pack out, they'll go do everything, particularly be itself in the mikveh. Fine, those women who are comfortable doing that should do that. There are other women who don't want to be bothered in the mikveh, they want to do everything at home. So there are many women who like to prepare at home, and then they'll go to the mikveh, and then right at the mikveh, they'll take a quick shower and just quickly go over their hair again. Then they have certain mikvehs have easy pass lines, express lines, you can do everything at home, again, depending on the time of the year, depending on different policies in the mikveh. Most mikvehs at least try to advocate that there should be something done in the mikveh itself, some bare bone minimum chafifa done in the mikveh itself. But again, in terms of how much, where, when, it's to a certain degree up to the preference of each particular woman. But again, it takes time, so the husbands have to be well aware of that. And whether that means that sometimes a person has to schedule their late afternoon or early evening around that, so be it. So it's not so easy to do a thorough chafifa if you have kids running all over the place. So again, maybe in your oven, everyone has to plan appropriately. For that matter, the Leil Tefillah also, one has to be extra sensitive and extra careful, especially in the presence of kids, that you want to be able to enable your wife to go to the mikveh in the most comfortable, relaxed, if those words are possible in today's vocabulary, And especially a Friday night. Friday night tefillah is usually an added dimension of tension. So it means the husband has to be available. And if it's sometimes, believe it or not, some people may say this sounds like apikorsis, but if it means missing davening in a minyan, so be it. That it's more important for your wife to go to the mikvah, v'shalom or v'shalva, than for you to daven kabbalah Shabbos with a minyan. So you'll daven ma'ariv and v'yechidus that Friday night. If there's no way to, no one else to watch your kids, and it's either going to the mikvah, you're davening kabbalah Shabbos and ma'ariv and a minyan, so be it. So you'll... If you lived in certain communities, I'd take you chapter late Meirev somewhere Friday night, but I don't know whether you'll catch any late Meirevs anywhere around here, but whatever it is, so try to plan accordingly. If you're able to hire a babysitter, obviously Efshel Kem Shneam would be a wonderful idea. Do not assume that, even if you have very, very young children, do not assume that you're free because your wife is going to take the child with her to the mikvah. Do not assume that's going to happen, although there are some women who do that, and they have been strongly asked not to do that in the future. It's not a good place, even for a baby. It's a certain degree of lack of sensitivity. There are some women who are in the mikvah who may be having trouble having children. That is not the place to assume that a child is going to be brought, even the child of the youngest age. So again, whether that means the husband has to plan appropriately, so be it. The only reason I mention is because it was an issue when it was brought to my attention. So I'm hereby, I was modiing the women when I spoke to the women about it last year, so I'm hereby modiing the men as well. That's not the place for children. When a woman goes to the mikvah, so she has to be careful that there are no chatzitzas, that there's nothing separating between her body, her hair, or other parts of the body, and the water of the mikvah. The details of Hilchos Chatzitza are not really, for us to go through the details right now. They're somewhat complicated, but suffice it to say that anything that's out of the ordinary, please bring to the attention, whichever Rav you're asking, bring to the attention of the Rav before your wife is standing in the mikvah. I get countless calls that about stitches and bandages and scabs and mices from the mikvah itself. The stitches have been there for the last week, so one could think in advance to ask the Shaila. Sometimes they have problem stitches, sometimes they're not a problem. Sometimes bandages, very often bandages are a problem, every once in a while they're not a problem. Casts, anything that seems like maybe a red flag in terms of Hilchos Chatzitza, so please have your wife or yourself, wherever it is, contact the Rav beforehand, that we don't have to have that last minute crisis, we can't find the Rav and someone's waiting to use the mikvah. Several years ago I got a frantic call from the mikvah about a woman who came, who had traveled hours to use the mikvah from somewhere out of Teaneck. She had traveled hours and hours to use the mikvah, and she had come with some very, very complicated chatzitza issue with whatever, with surgeries, with mices, with bolts and screws. That's kind of a very, very complicated story, with casts coming off and coming on and everything. She traveled for 3 hours and to find out, so they called me. I had no way to solve the problem. I told them that she cannot use the mikvah in the state that it was in now. It would have saved everybody a lot of aggravation if she would have just contacted beforehand. So again, one has to be careful about that. After the share is over and all the recorders are over, I'll tell you the end of that story, but not for now. Okay, so anyway, leave it for pre-Meirev, 844 post-game show. Okay, anyway. After the woman comes back from using the mikvah, so there are just a couple of small things that one should be aware of. There are many poskim who have the opinion that the woman is supposed to be meidia, she's supposed to inform her husband that she actually went to the mikvah. It's a question whether it's absolutely necessary for her to verbalize it, or whether he comes in and she sees her hair's wet. It's obvious she went to the mikvah, is that enough? There are some poskim makbid that she should make an absolute oral declaration, tavalti, she doesn't have to say it in Lashon HaKodesh, she can say whatever, I went, I'm done, I finished, shen gemarnu, so amuteras, whatever words that she wants to use. So there are some who have that practice. If you haven't been following that practice until now, and you decide that you want to start to follow that practice, going to those poskim, so try to talk to your wife about it beforehand. Don't, when she comes back, after spending 2 hours preparing herself and going to the mikvah on a frigid winter night, and then you, with your big chumrah, say, oh, by the way, did you go to the mikvah tonight? And she may be a little bit insulted by the question, so just blame it on me. Everything else gets blamed this way also. So, Zolzai. But again, there are some poskim who do think that this is, that is something one should be mocked. But again, not everybody agrees to that. there are different practices about a woman bathing herself or taking a shower after she comes back from the mikvah. There's a complicated sugya in Masech Shabbos, one of Yichas Dovah, with Tumah V'Tahara and Truma. Mikra Din, it's not really true. Mikra Din, a woman's allowed to go to take a shower right after she comes out of the mikvah. But there is a practice, there are more quotes in age-old minhag, at least in Ashkenazi communities, that the woman doesn't shower immediately when coming back from the mikvah. There are different practices as to how far this minhag goes. Some are makbid only in the mikvah building itself. Some are makbid when they get home, until Bir Rishona afterwards, or until maybe the whole night. Again, there are different minhagim about this. So whatever the wife's been doing until this point is perfectly okay. Just be aware that such a custom, at least in Ashkenazi communities, does exist. Just a short word about using the mikvah, that obviously one has to make sure that the mikvah the one is using is kosher. We assume that if it's a normal mikvah in a normal frum community, then the mikvah is usually under the tightest scrutiny of the rabbanim in town, so there's usually nothing to be overly concerned about. However, if one finds themselves using other kinds of bodies of water, or wanting to use other kinds of bodies of water, one has to be very, very careful. One should never assume that, well, yeah, it says in the Torah you can go into water, so okay, this is great. Not all lakes are necessarily okay. Rivers pose a very serious halachic issue. Even the ocean, although the ocean is technically kosher, there are a lot of halachic technicalities of using the ocean. So anytime you're using anything but a regular, normal, certified mikveh that's under a regular, rabbanim or supervising it, one has to ascertain what exactly the halacha is. I remember I once had I was once talking about this in Stern years ago. I used to teach in Stern. So I was giving a shiur or something about mikvos, and I mentioned something about waterfalls, a whole sugi in the Gemara about it. So some girl came up to me and said she has a friend who lives in Hawaii who's married, and she's been using a waterfall for the last 10 years as a mikvah. And she asked me, should I say anything to her? I said, yeah, I think so. I think it's maybe possible in the Torah, so it's probably a good idea to inform her about it. So I figured that was the whole year of teaching in Sturm was worth that one couple I saved from who knows how many surim, just because it looks like water and it has that lush feel of Hawaii to it. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's mutter. So one has to be careful before any lakes, streams, ocean, anything of that nature. One has to get the proper guidance whether that's acceptable or not. Somebody just this week asked me about a certain community. They're going to be traveling a certain famous tourist destination, Charmaine Nameless, which doesn't really have an organized Orthodox community of any shape or form, but it just happens to have two mikvos in that city for whatever strange reason. One is because certain people who frequent a lot of places built themselves a mikvah. And then there was another group of people, not necessarily part of the Orthodox Jewish community, who wanted to use that mikvah and they were not given the permission to use that for Geirus, and therefore they built themselves their own mikvah. So there are two mikvahs in the same place. There's not one shul there, not a minyan there, but there are two mikvahs. I think they're probably both kosher mikvahs. So strange thing. So again, you have to do your research if you're going to a strange place, so make sure that you find out a little bit about what's going on. Okay. I want to speak a little bit about some of the halachas that are relevant when the woman is a nida. So we have to, in a sense, backtrack a little bit. So in a situation where the woman is still a nida, when we speak about her being a nida, we mean either literally she's the first few days of nidus, or even during the whole week of Shiva Nikiyam, we assume that until she goes to the mikveh, everything is pretty much the same in this area. This is the area of halacha, what's called the harchakos. Harchakos, harchok, means literally to stay away, distance. So this is a whole area of halacha that some of it is deraisa, some of it is derabanan, some of it is minhagim, that the halacha insists that a couple observes when the woman is considered to be a nida. One has to take this area of halacha with the utmost seriousness. The Gemara has some very, very scary story in the Yidmas and Shabbos about a certain person who was mazalza in the area of Harchokas. We don't want to spook anybody out right now, but suffice it to say, didn't have a happy ending, that story. So the one has to take this area of halacha with the utmost seriousness. What exactly are the parameters of Harchokas? What do we practically have to be aware of in terms of Harchokas? So the first, most basic thing, it's not even really Harchok, it's we assume it's an Issa D'Araisa. It's any physical contact, what we call the Derechiba, to the husband and wife and the woman is a nida, is absolutely prohibited. We assume halacha, this is an Issa D'Araisa. That's what the Rambam paskins, that's what the Shach and Yeradeh paskins, like that opinion, that any physical contact, whether that's kissing, hugging, holding hands, anything of any shape or form of derechiba is absolutely prohibited in the Torah. When I say min haTorah, I mean min haTorah. It carries with it an onus of malchus. It's technically the same as eating chazer. It's the same as doing malach and yontif. Same as wearing shatnez. It's a real mekoy. We're talking about a very, very serious prohibition min haTorah. So this is something that's obviously not negotiable under any circumstances. If you have individuals who are not observing the halacha properly, so we shouldn't discourage them from keeping whatever they can keep properly. If you have a couple who's saying, listen, I'm not going to keep all the details, but we're going to be nizah from actual relations, okay, that's something. That's at least something they'll observe the Isuri Kares. It's not something that we're striving for, but you know, hopefully with Hashem, they'll grow in their ruchnias, they'll be able to observe the halacha properly. But again, derech chiba, any touching derech chiba is something which is out of the question. Any negiyah shelo b'derech chiba is also with the rabbanon. It means any time, any contact with the Gemara calls a filu b'yetzba katana is absolutely out of the question between husband and wife during the time when the woman is in nida. Not only is any touching whatsoever out of the question, even shelo b'derech chiba, but even things which are not outright touching, clothing touching, things of that nature, also prohibited to such an extent that the Rishonim instituted, according to a simple reading of the halacha, this is b'teres minhug, but the Rishonim instituted a minhug that the husband and wife are not supposed to pass things to one another when the woman is in nida. The reason for this was, according to at least the Rashba writes, one of the reasons was, it was a harchocha to the issue of touching, that if they're going to handing things to each other, they're inevitably going to touch one another. So therefore, we assume this is absolutely also. Now again, I say it b'teres minhug because it doesn't appear in the Gemara explicitly. There are some Rishonim who read into the Gemara, but we assume that's not really Medina de Gemara, but it still is an age-old minhag Yisrael. It's a universal minhag. Ashkenazim, everyone has this minhag, and one should observe this minhag under all circumstances. So this minhag Yisrael of not passing things directly from husband to wife or vice versa. It's sometimes this hachokah that draws attention to itself, so one has to just be careful not to make a big fuss about it. There's no great mitzvah to about to hand something to your wife and then announce it at the top of your lungs, oh, please drop it, you know, I can't hand it to you directly. So that's obviously a breach of tzniyas and a breach of just basic b'ram l'chaver, basic sensitivity. On the other hand, if people notice that the woman is in nida, okay, so the halach is you're not supposed to make a big fuss about it, but the reality is that any, Baruch Hashem, any woman who's shamatara mitzvahs, if everything is normal with her bodies, she's in nida, half the month, she's in nida. So, okay, so everyone knows that. So it's not the end of the world, so one should try to observe this halacha properly, again, without too much commotion over it, but one should try to afal b'chein observe this halacha. What exactly is included or what perhaps is excluded from this halacha? So there's a famous discussion in the poskim, probably the most common shaila, is the handing of babies one to another. So the poskim have different opinions about this. Is it permissible to hand the baby when the woman is in nida? So some acharonim had a very lomda shakula, chai nos yes atzmo, sugi from hilchos Shabbos, it's not called carrying, deraisa, derabanan. That's probably not the reason why it should be mutter if it's mutter. So another possible reason why maybe it should be mutter, so Rabbi Willig is very fond of saying, he thinks it's mutter because it's b'machom choli. The Rishonim have a klal, we'll talk about it in a moment, that many of the halachos were lifted in situations of illness. So even if it's not pikuach nefesh, just a mere illness of one of the parties, that was a ground to permit some of the halachos, some of the dinim derabanan. So I really thought that if you can insist that the couple has to always put the baby down, that could potentially cause a situation of choli. Babies, little babies, are usually considered to be like a chola she'ain by sakana, and the tzarech yachol, the baby's got to be diapered and cleaned, you're going to put the baby down on the floor, the mother's going to pick it up, it's going to interfere with the proper care of the chola. So he thought that maybe those were grounds to be matir. So again, there are yesh v'yesh. Others didn't quote this idea. He did accept this idea. So again, there are different opinions about this. Those who want to be make will definitely yesh adam gol to be semichon, to be matir, to hand babies. Babies, when they're babies, not 10-year-olds, when they're babies, when they're little babies, whenever you use your judgment as to how old babies are for these purposes. If the baby has to be handed, that means he or she is still a baby. Okay. The poskim discuss about carrying things together. So you want a husband and wife want to carry a big load together. Some poskim are making on that because that's so shalom b'derechib, so far removed from any the carrying a dresser up the stairs or something together. They're schlepping the sukh across the street. Kash l'maisa. So whatever is a very, very big hassle to do. So then some say that's not really considered to be included in the sechach. So again, so the first area of achach is the area of touching. Then we move into the next area of achach, which deals with the realm of food. We know that food, socialization, and schmoozing, that's always a potential recipe for problems in this area. So the Mishnah actually tells us, this is a chokha mid derabanan, this is the real, this is a Mishnah in Masech Shabbos, that the chokha made a gezeira mid derabanan, that when a woman is in need, the husband and wife are not supposed to eat together. Achila biyachad is considered to be a problem. We're afraid that that's going to lead to a little bit too much of a socialization, and it may lead to inappropriate activity. So what exactly constitutes achila biyachad? How yachad is yachad? So there are different opinions in this. So the Rambam's opinion is that this only applies if the couple's eating mamash out of the same bowl. They're sitting and munching a bowl of popcorn together. I take my piece, she takes our piece, so that's already a little bit too close for comfort. They're sitting at the same table, so that's not a problem. So even though the Rambam holds that way, in Shulchan Aruch we don't accept that. We assume that the Isra applies even if it's at the same table. That's also called the Chila B'Yachat. The Rush says that he thinks that even the Machmirim would only say it if they're sitting at a very, very small table. It means the mamash on top of each other. But he's on one end, she's 30 feet down, you can barely see her, can't hear her. So please pass the food. So that's the Rush says he doesn't think that would be a problem. And we generally don't follow that either. We try to be machmir. Our minhag is that any eating together, husband and wife should not be eating together at the same table when the woman is in need. However, there are a few exceptions to this rule. One of the exceptions is if you make a heker, if you make something recognizable just to remind you that she's in need, then it's okay. There's like bas b'chol, the same halachas appear. So if you put something on the table that's not usually there, that would serve as a heker. Or if you have a separate mat, so each one is basically eating on their own mat, that's okay. Or if you don't have formal mats, you just stick a napkin, a paper towel, or a towel or something under one of the plates, that's good enough of a heker. So anything that reminds you, draws attention that the woman is in need, that would be okay. There are poskim who may kill that if there are other people around at the time, that would also be okay. Assuming how old, a little infant probably is not going to do the trick, but if you have children who are old enough to understand a little bit, they're running around, or you're eating at a restaurant, a lot of people around, or other Shabbos guests around, so then the whole Isser wouldn't apply altogether. So many a make like that. So again, although the Isser of Achila B'Yachad, our minig is to apply it even to big tables, and even to not necessarily one bowls, but Afa B'Chein, if you have a couple of different possible kulas to pretty much circumvent this Isser very, very often. I don't think it's such a. I think you should try to observe it anyway. Try to avoid the issue. Whatever. Try to figure it out. And even if you can't figure it out, you can't. So you have to. I don't think one should violate the halacha because of that. There are other halachas also in the realm of food. I think with the Rishonim speaking about shiur machola, that if the woman ate food and you want to come over and start munching away on her leftovers, so assuming that she finished eating, if she didn't finish eating, then maybe you should let her finish her food. But if you get hungry and you want to finish her food or her drink, so the Rishonim have a tradition that you shouldn't do that. Some of the Rishonim have such a tradition you shouldn't do that. You should do it shalom b'fanah. You should do it only if she's not around. So either take the food and go somewhere else, or some of the Ramah writes, you transfer the food to another plate. It should be some kind of a heker that you're not mamish munching together and eating together, even though you're not technically eating mamish basachas, just eating from her leftovers is also considered to be a problem. The Rishonim also quote, as part of this whole idea in the realm of food, is that one has to be especially careful with wine, that one's not supposed to pass a cup of wine to one's wife, even if you're not going to actually hand it to her, you're going to put it down the table, that's also a problem, because wine, again, has certain connotations to it, so one should not be sending a cup of wine to one's wife when she isn't either. This usually doesn't come up for us during the week, most of us, we hope we're not drinking wine during the week too much, but on Shabbos, so most people drink wine, most people want to give their wife a little bit of the wine, so if it's just you and your wife together, so then it's probably better for the weeks that she's in need than not to drink the wine altogether. You should just drink it and finish. Well, if you drink it, put it down, then you go to wash it, she picks it up and drinks it, that's fine. If you have a lot of guests and you want to just send out a plate with 20 little cups of wine and she takes one, that's okay. But to be miyached her wine and to say, here, I'm sending you the wine, and put it down on the table in front of her, so that's an issue. In general, when it comes to serving one another food, this goes from husband to wife or wife to husband, so one should not serve the food directly. Wife shouldn't put down the bowl of soup directly in front of the husband. She should either put it down a little bit out of the ordinary, or it should be, she could do it with her left hand, assuming she doesn't spill it. She should do it something, it should be some kind of kliyachayad, just again to have that recognizable that she doesn't need this. So again, in the whole realm of achil and shtia, because food has that ability to bring people close together, so Chazal, both Torah Stidim Dirabon, and the Taurus Minhagim, we're very careful that we want it to always be clear that the woman is in need unless one comes to violate any more serious serve in this realm. Another area of a Chazal, of obvious reasons, also instituted a whole series of achokas, both Petaris Didim Durabon and Petaris Minhagim, is in the realm of the bedroom. So one has to, under no circumstances, are the couple permitted to sleep in the same bed. When the woman is in need, it doesn't matter how big the bed is, and not touching, they're 3 feet apart, doesn't matter. Mita Achas, the Gemara of the Ferish is also. The Ramah writes that even if it's two different beds, but the beds are touching one another, that's also a problem. So the beds are supposed to be separated. How separate are they supposed to be? So there are different Minhagim as to how separate separate than it's supposed to be. I always tell people, I give it what I call the roll test. That means, samach v'adam right, that you roll out of one bed and see where you end up. If you end up with the other person's bed, you're too close. If you end up flat on the floor, then you're okay. So you don't have to literally do the test, just try to figure it out. What would you do? Where would you fall if you would fall? That, I think, is the correct thing to do. I think that one should not have beds that are connected at all. I know there are different people who like to have headboards and mices and kunsim and all kind of different things. Again, I think that the more correct thing to do is, I didn't say also, I think the more correct thing to do is the bed should mamash be separate. They should not be touching, should not be connected at all at the time of the woman's anida. Every once in a blue moon, you get the same shal about the bunk beds, about are you allowed to sleep in a bunk bed when the woman is anida. So if you go camping, try to plan your camping trips accordingly. There are different opinions about the bunk beds. I can't give you an outright straight answer on that one. Other things that one should be aware of, particularly in the realm of the bedroom, is that one is not supposed to sit on his wife's bed when she has an Ida, even though she's not necessarily around right now. One's not supposed to be sitting on her bed. Also important in terms of the bedroom is general dressing, which really goes beyond the bedroom also, but more often the shalat take place in the bedroom, that a husband is not supposed to see what's called makamas ha-machusa shaba. Those areas of the wife's body that are usually covered, so the husband should not be seeing when she has an Ida. So that means just common sense, both from the husband and the wife, and when she's getting undressed, so husband shouldn't be standing right there to see those areas of the body. There are different opinions in the poskim what exactly constitutes makamas ha-machusas. There's a fundamental question, does makamas ha-machusas mean those areas that the halacha requires of a woman to cover, or does makamas ha-machusas mean those areas where the woman generally, her practice is to cover in the presence of her husband? So if we have big nafkamina ladina, let's say, lamashal, the halacha requires that a woman is not permitted to walk out in public with her arms being exposed. A married woman is not permitted to walk in public with her hair exposed. A woman is not allowed to walk with her above her knee being exposed. So all of these are absolute halachas. They're dinim in the Mishnayis and the Gemaras, that a woman is not permitted, married or single. I mean, the only difference between married and single is vis-a-vis the hair, but in terms of exposing one's upper arms, exposing one's leg, according to some posts, even the lower part of the leg is not allowed to be exposed. And even the Mekil, the biggest Mekil, the Mishnebura, was the biggest Mekil in this area. So the Mishnebura said that a woman is allowed to expose from beneath the knee. It means underneath the calf is technically permitted to be exposed. There's nobody ever was mopped there to have anything above the knee exposed under any circumstances. Nothing to do with Chesnida, this is with just regular Chesnias. I've said it public in different places. It's always a good time to reiterate this. Under no circumstances whatsoever to any heter, and this should be strongly discouraged. How to get the message across? Sometimes one may need certain finesse, and again, these are case by case basis how exactly the message should come. But everyone should know what the emes is. The emes here are darko, that there are no heterum kihuza for a woman, either single or married, to be dressed in any way, shape, or form that anything above her knee is ever exposed, whether she's sitting, standing on her head, or whatever it is. Under any circumstances, is that permissible? But again, that's not due to chesnida, but it's an important haradis to be made in light of the reality of the world. Yeah. No, Tevach B'Yisha Erva doesn't. It has nothing to do with how much you're allowed to be exposed. Tevach B'Yisha Erva has did it in terms of Kriya Shema, but it wouldn't even apply there. It applies in places which are not technically halachically Erva. The Gemara says that Shok B'Yisha is Erva, so therefore she would not be permitted to expose even the smallest amount. And again, I'm going with the biggest Kula. The Mishabura is the biggest make. The Mishabura says that Shok only applies above the knee. The Chaznish has arrived from a mission that even that's not true. But again, the Mishabura had his Cheshbaina, so whatever his Svara was. So those who want to rely on the Mishabura, I can't argue with, but it can't be more than the Mishabura. Anyway, getting back to the story. So the Ramesh has a shaila about what's the status of Makamas and Mechusas. What do you allow to see when the woman is a Nida? So let's say the woman is walking around in the house with she always walks around in shorts in the house. I'm not advocating that, but let's say in theory she always walks around in shorts in the house. So Moshe says that she can technically walk around in shorts when she's in Eid also, because her Makamas HaMechusas is not that. Or let's say the woman walks around with the hair uncovered in the house. So she's technically allowed to do that in the house when there are no other men around. Again, I'm not advocating that either. Those who learn Daf Yomi, Kimchas, if you want 7 Kohanim Gedolim, if you're not a Kohen, that's going to be hard to pull off, but if you want 7 Kohanim Gedolim, it's a good idea. But You have to have a really, really lot of tznius if you're not a kohen to get 7 kohanim gedolim out of that. But whatever it is, the bottom line is, let's say a woman walks around with her hair uncovered, or she sleeps with her hair uncovered normally. So Ramesh says, therefore she could walk, her husband could see her hair uncovered when she's in Ida. Because that's not called mekamas hamechusa shabbat. Even though halachically she cannot go outside the house with her hair uncovered, that's not called mekamas hamechusa shabbat. And many disagreed with Ramesh on that also. So in many of our communities, the Dominican America, is many communities are lenient like Ramesh. So again, no tithe doesn't want to follow Ramesh's cheshbon, but even Ramesh was only mekil and those kinds of things. And the woman is stam getting undressed, so she doesn't walk around totally undressed. So that would be mekamas hamechusas, and the husband would have to be of utmost care not to be present, not to be watching at that time. That's what the post can point out. If a woman, husband wants to be present in the delivery room, so Ramesh says mikra din is mutter, but since most of the time the woman is already needed at that point, so you have to be careful not to look at the mekamas hamechusas. You have to use a little bit of common sense in terms of that area. There are other areas of achokas. One of the areas of achokas is something that was a harder one to pin down in terms of an actual definition. That's what's called tzchok mekalas rosh. When there's a little bit of too much frivolous activity between husband and wife, so that's also something that should be avoided at the time when the woman is a nida. So again, that doesn't mean that you're not allowed to talk to your wife when she's in Ida. It doesn't mean that's supposed to be nice. It doesn't mean you can't schmooze. Obviously, there are certain things that you are permitted and should be encouraged to do. However, there are certain lines of Tzchok Begalus Rosh and Derechiba and too much, talk about things which have more physical intimacy types of connotations are things that should be curtailed during the time when she's in Ida. There's always the famous question about, are you permitted to say the magic words, I love you, when she's in Ida? And the answer is, Alom Desh answer, it depends. Depends how it's said. There's an I love you and there's an I love you. There's an I love you with the lights dimmed, and there's an I love you when you're calling from traffic and you're trying to say, I'll be home in the next 3 years, love you, and hang up the phone and hope for the best. So that may not be derechiba. That may be pekuach nefesh. So whatever it is, yesh v'yesh. Okay, you have to use a little bit of common sense in terms of that. We move on to the last topic in Uchas Nida, at least for our purposes, and that's the issue of Vestos. So we could spend a lot of time on Vestos or a little time on Vestos. So we're going to try to make this really, really quick, called Vestos Made Easy. So either you can look at your charts, which, I don't know what they say on them, and assuming they can say pretty much what I'm going to say. Basically, what the halacha is as follows. Everything you have to know about Vestos in the next 3 minutes. The halacha tells us that even though the woman is not technically a nida, but she's about to become a nida, so one is not permitted to have relations at that point. That's still what's called in halacha prisha samach leveses. Veses means the normal cycle when she's expecting a period. Prisha samach leveses. There's a big machlekes in the Rishonim. Is that an issa derais, an issa derabban? The Gemara quotes a pasuk. It's an asmachta. Ra'or, a rashba. The bottom line is it's also whether it's derais or derabban. The bottom line is it's a mishnayis, a maseches nida. Sugis in the end of maseches nida. There's no question that it didn't exist. Prisha samach leveses. The question is, what do you mean samach leveses? I don't have ruach hakodesh. How am I going to know when she's going to become a nida? So what criteria do you use to determine that she's about to become a nida? So the Gemara says that there are a whole series of different criteria that the halacha has for us to what we call an educated guess, to give our best shot. We may be wrong, but it's a halachically educated guess. Usually it's based on past performance, namely whatever her previous cycles were. That usually indicates to us and at least a chashash as to when the next period is going to come. So there are really three different factors that we take into consideration. One is what's called the Yom HaChodesh, whatever day of the Hebrew month it is. Let's say, for example, today is it's now Aleph Shvat. According to Beishamai, Rov Gish B'Shana Rova, most of the winter is over in Aleph Shvat, according to Beishamai. I think we've even started the Rov Gish B'Shana yet, according to the weather forecast. But Aleph Shvat is today's date. So Lu Yitzu, that a woman would get a period today, so then she would write down, or calculate, put it on her computer, whatever, she keeps her Vestas calendar, she would write that she got a period on Aleph Shvat. What that means practically is, when Aleph Adar rolls around, she has to be afraid that maybe she's going to get a period again on Aleph Adar. So she's also to her husband, Tef Tashmish, they can't have relations on Aleph Adar. Whatever the day she had a period last month, whatever the halachic date was, that becomes also the next month as well. In addition to the Yom HaChodesh, there's also what we call the Yom HaFloga. Floga means an interval. So she has to know already when last period was. Let's say if last period was 28 days ago, for argument's sake, so then she has to count 28 days from Aleph Shvat, and then on the 28th day, so then she has to be asura to her husband that day also. Because we don't know whether her body is following a rhythm of the calendar, or whether the body is following her own biological rhythm, which, depending on what her last period was, would indicate that's the direction that she's going. So that's what's called the Yom HaFloga. And then the third thing she has to be aware of is what we call an onabeninus. Onabeninus means that most women who don't have absolutely set cycles usually see around 30 days. So we assume that the 30th day after she saw, that's also a potential problem. So again, this is the Ramah, this is not mine, this is the Ramah's Vestas made simple. The Ramah says that every time a woman gets a period, so she has to mark down when she gets when she starts the period. When we say starting the period, most poskim assume it means when the flow actually begins. Some women start to stain a little bit before, but we're working with the assumption it means when the flow actually starts. She has to mark down her calendar and make a note as to when exactly, which day the period started, and she has to be aware of when the last period was also. And now, in 4 weeks or so down the line, so she has to be aware of three things. She has to be aware of, is it the Yom HaChodesh? Is it the Yom HaFloga? And is it the, or is it the Ona Beninus? All three of those days, she is Asura Mitashmish. So it may sound like, wow, that's a lot of days. You just knocked 3 days off the calendar. So the answer is we didn't really do that. Because first of all, very often those days overlap with one another. Very often she gets a period before any of those days even came around. So more than half the time, you know, it's an academic shaila, these 3 days. But for another reason is that we assume, la'alocha mikra din, that whenever she got a period, if she got a period in the daytime, then she's a surah the next daytime, 30 days later, or vesas, or flaga later. If she got a period during the nighttime, then the isser is during the nighttime. Since most of the time women get the periods during the daytime for a simple reason that they're awake during the daytime, that's when they usually notice things. So when the woman notices that she got a period, that's when the tchilas of vesas is. So if it was the daytime, then the vestas will be in the daytime. Since 80% of the time or so women get the periods in the daytime, 80% of vestas will be daytime vestas, which most couples are not having tashmish anyway for good reasons during the daytime. Anyway, so a lot of this halacha vestas, when you start to learn, you say, oh my goodness, we're just knocking days right and left and night, everything's, we're losing another week. So it's not really true. It's not, it's theoretically true, but it's not practically true. So you have to just keep track of those three things to be aware when the vestas is. There is an opinion in the Rishonim, it's a minority view in the Rishonim called the Arzarua. The Arzarua maintains that any time you have a Yom HaVestas, not only are you not allowed to be together during the Yom HaVestas, you're not allowed to be together the night before as well. If you follow that practice of the other Ruah, then you just knocked off a few nights off the end of the month. Many poskim did not accept the Ozer Ruah, some did accept the Ozer Ruah, so there are different customs within Klal Yisrael. So with the Ikra Din, we don't follow the Ozer Ruah. Those who want to be Machmeh, Tov Aleichem Bracha, husband and wife should decide whether they want to follow this opinion of the Ozer Ruah. But if you don't follow the Ozer Ruah, then you just salvage a lot of extra nights. Okay, so but in addition to the Isser of Tashmish at the time of the Vestas, there is a Chovas Bedika. The woman has to check herself during the time of the Vestas as well, just to make sure she's not actually beginning pleading that she missed. There are different opinions in the Poskim, which of these Vestas you have to do Bedikas on. There are, according to the simple reading of the Halacha is, you have to do a Bedika on all of these Vestas, and there are other Poskim who maintain that only the 30th day requires a Bedika. So again, there are different customs, whatever your wife's been doing for the last years, so she should continue to do.
The Isser of Tashmish,
even if the bedikah is over. Right, you have to do both. You have to have a bedikah b'shas ha-vesas, and then the time has to pass. If she passed the time and she did the bedikah, then okay. As a just common sense, it would be smart that if a woman has passed the points of the vestas, even though she's technically muteres, she did her bedikahs at the right time, everything is technically okay, it's probably a good idea before Tashmish just for her to do an external check, not an actual bedikah, but just to take a look and see if nothing's going on. Unless she's pregnant, she's most probably going to get a period very, very soon. So just common sense would dictate you don't want to run into what's called Rod Damachas Tashmish, becomes a very, very complicated area of halacha. So again, just common sense would dictate to make some kind of an external check beforehand. During the time of the Vestas, whatever the Vestas we're talking about, there's an issue of Tashmish. There are different opinions about other physical contacts. Hachokas are for sure permissible. Other physical contacts, Chibuk, Nishuk, etc., different opinions. We pass Mikra Din the Mutter. Some are Machmer in that. Machmer, Tavalechem, Bracha. Those who are not Machmer should also get Brachas. We're Hasidish, we get Brachas to everybody. Everyone gets Brachas. But Mikra Din, only Tashmish itself is also. So again, the most important part of Vestas is that the woman should be aware of what's happening. She should write down, it's the following date, it's a daylight Vestas, it's a nighttime Vestas. If you have any questions, is it when it is, we follow from Nates to Shkia. If you have any questions, please feel free to contact me or the other Rabbanim in town, just to make sure that we have the Vestas done properly to avoid confusion in weeks to come.
Like,
Yeah, technically, if she's not really, if we haven't passed yet, those stains are also, we're just passing that we're afraid they may be also, so then technically other things would be winter. Although, technically in Shulchan Aruch, these are the three official vestas, there are other vestas mentioned which become relevant for us. The Gemara talks about the possibility of a woman eating certain foods that triggers periods, so we usually don't have that today, but we do have medications. We have what the Radvaz already wrote 500 years ago, the Radvaz had herbs that were triggering periods, so we have a little bit better than the herbs of the Radvaz that will trigger a period. Basically, if a woman is on medication, if the pills, assuming she's permitted to be on the birth control pills, if they're really, really monitoring the cycle properly, and she's pretty much seeing the clockwork, so then all of these different numbers don't really apply. The thing that she really has to follow is the pills. Let's say if she knows that she gets her period every 28 days, so as soon as she comes off the pill, within 2 days she gets a period, so then anytime she's within 24 hours of an anticipated period, she should refrain from tashmish. So again, it may not correspond necessarily with the Yom HaChodesh and the Yom HaFlugas and everything, but bottom line is that if she knows based on her medical cycle that she's about to get a period soon, she should refrain from tashmish. Similarly, if a woman has other kinds of symptoms, she feels it's not technically the halachic vesas, but tachlish, her back hurts, her legs hurt, and her period is around the corner the next day or two, so that's like a vesas haguf, she should also refrain from tashmish at that point as well. So there are the official formal vestas of the calendar, and then there's everything else that also goes into Hilchos Vestas. Hilchos Vestas is a complicated area of halacha, but again, this is the simplest way to do it. I did not even talk about what's called Vestas Kavua. If a woman establishes patterns of Vestas that she sees multiple months in the same day, it's very, very unlikely that it happens. It's very rare. Only if she's on medication, it's almost never happens. So we're not going to spend too much talking about it. There are a lot of complicated dinim in the siman about vestas, but you know, most of it is not as relevant to mice. If you remember these three basic points and keep good calendars, usually be home free in terms of vestas. I was originally going to talk a little bit about some divrei machshav and a little bit of divrei hashkafa, but this time from Ayrev and Salaf to put the hashkafa and the hashkafa machshava slash pot on hold. So I don't know when, but sometime hopefully. Yeah, future will give a little bit more divrei chizuk in this area as well. Okay. Oh, 1 second. Hold on.